Do banks really have to rule the world, or is there a better way to think about money and how it does or doesn't make us happy? Steve Paulson is here in the studio with me. Steve's been looking into this question. So what have you found?
Jim, it turns out there are visionaries who are trying to reconceptualize the very nature of money itself. And one of them is Bernard Liotard, who has a fascinating personal history. He was a top official at the National Bank of Belgium and actually one of the people who designed the single currency system in Europe, what became the euro. Liotard wanted to do more, but he was told he couldn't, so he left.
That sounds intriguing. Where'd he go?
Well, he's gone on this fascinating personal journey, leaving the world of mainstream economics. He says what we really need are different kinds of money, what are known as alternative currencies that operate entirely outside the banking system. So Liotard recently teamed up with a journalist named Jackie Dunn to write a book called Rethinking Money. And they stopped by our studio to talk about the problems of single currencies like the U.S. dollar.
We have been trained to believe that you need to do everything with one single tool, that every country needs to have one currency, and that currency will do everything. We have been able to prove that actually that's not true. Number one, we're already in a world where multiple currencies are being used. And number two, the stability of the whole is actually enhanced by having a variety. This is not theory. Switzerland is well known to be a more stable country than its neighbors. And the reason for that is that they've been using a dual currency system now for almost 80 years.
A dual currency system?
Yes.
What are the two different kinds
well,
of currencies?
Well, you have the Swiss franc, mm-hmm. which everybody knows. And you have a second currency called the WIR, W-I-R, which is a business-to-business currency.
What is a business-to-business currency?
It's a currency created by businesses when they transact with each other. When I sell you something, I have a credit. You have a debit.
I think what's really interesting here, Steve, is how this currency came about. It was way back in the dark days of 1934 in Switzerland, and 17 businessmen got a letter. All of them got a letter from their banks that morning saying, guess what, guys? Your credit line has been stopped. And they sat around with their heads in their hands and saying, good Lord, what are we going to do? And then they realized that they actually all transacted with one another. So rather than going to the bank as they had done traditionally and borrowing money from the local bank, they realized that as they were trading with one another, they could create their own internal currency. And this has kept business doing extremely well in Switzerland for the last 80 years. And about 20% of all business is actually transacted in WIR.
So but let me back up for a moment. What's wrong with just a single currency? It would seem like that's the easiest thing. And that's certainly what most of us are familiar with. I mean, in the United States, there is the almighty dollar. I mean, that would seem to be the money that determines everything. What's wrong with just using that?
It is more efficient. You're correct. But it is more fragile. It's more brittle. Let me explain why. But using the same example of the WIR in Switzerland, if you give a normal business, a Swiss business guy, the choice between 1,000 Swiss franc and 1,000 WIR, he will always take the Swiss francs because with that he can pay his taxes. With that he can take vacations in Mexico and he can buy stuff from China. With the other one, he has to use the credits with 70,000 other businesses in the country. On the other hand, if we're in the recession and everybody's credit has been cut as is happening now, well, then I grab it. So that currency is counterbalancing systemically what happens in the conventional money. If such a system was available in America right now, don't you think there are lots of businesses that actually would like to trade with each other? It's like having a spare tire. It's a stupid idea until you have a flat, right?
So you're not actually saying that there should be an alternative currency that replaces the current monetary system. You're saying there should be additional forms of currency.
Exactly. Other media of exchange than those created by bank debt, which is how dollars are created, and therefore have the capacity to adapt to circumstances of the conventional economy.
There's another way of looking at it. We're talking about having a monetary toolbox. The dollar is brilliant, or the national currencies are brilliant. They were created 400 years ago in a time with a very different sensibility and a very different sets of needs. Today, we're in an information age, a very different age than the industrial age, and we need different currencies to actually address our problems.
And there actually are lots of different kinds of currencies, right? I mean, around the world. I mean, there aren't just a few alternative currencies.
Sure.
I mean, there are hundreds, if not thousands.
There are thousands. Let me start with one example that all your listeners are familiar with. Frequent flyer miles.
Okay.
They exist in 40 years. There are two things that it has shown. Number one, it's possible to have very large-scale systems. There are 15,000 billion miles in circulation today. This is not a marginal little thing, at very low cost. If it was expensive, you needed an army of clerks to make this happen, it wouldn't happen. Second point, you can change behavior for a long time. And that's extraordinarily important because we need behavior change now in our society.
In what way has the frequent flyer system changed behavior?
Well, you tend to prefer to take the same airline, don't you?
Sure.
Before that, you didn't. And if it wasn't working, they wouldn't do it, would they?
Okay. And you want to pay with that particular credit card so you can rack up your miles.
There we go. So in other words, it is working in terms of changing behavior. And what a currency does, a complementary currency of that type, is always linking an unused resource, i.e. an empty seat, with an unmet need, i.e. in this case, the need for the airline to get loyalty from you. But just imagine there's a lot of unmet needs in the society and there's a lot of unused resources.
So what are some other kinds of complementary currencies?
Maybe we can describe some stories about how ordinary people, by thinking outside of the box, actually created a solution, a monetary solution to their problems. I think one of my favorite stories, and it's about 25 years old, but it actually goes to the point because it's been so successful, is in Curitiba, Brazil, the mayor at that time had a huge problem of garbage, particularly in the favelas. And he did not have any money. I mean, there was nowhere to go for money. So he did have a bus system that was running a lot of buses that were empty. So he sent out a notice to the favelas and saying to all the children in the favelas, for every bag of garbage they bring in that has been pre-sorted between like paper, cans and glass, they would get a bus token. So lo and behold, within about 2-3 weeks, the favelas were picked clean of garbage. And you can imagine the problems with garbage between rats and diseases, etc. Then the kids had these tokens, which then enabled them and their families to use the bus service. And then local farmers started accepting these tokens in trade for vegetables and fruits that were grown locally.
Hmm. So they weren't just used to ride the buses.
Yes,
then.
It became a currency. Yeah, it actually became a currency. Hmm. The brilliant thing about this is Jaime Lerner, again, an architect and a systems thinker, designed several other currencies. And within about 5 to 6 years, the average person who lived in Curitiba had a standard of living that was 1/3 higher than the average Brazilian living somewhere else. So it's not just this cute little idea. It actually showed up in the bottom line of everybody's paycheck.
You're saying that this all happened just because of the system of bus tokens?
That is what they credited to. Huh. Yes. Another thing that they did is the bus system today in Curitiba is world standard in terms of quality. People with cars don't bother to take the car. They prefer to take the bus because it's faster to get there and you don't have to park at the other end.
How big a city is this?
Well, it must be between 3 and 4 million now.
Oh, so we're talking very big.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, it has grown big.
Yeah. So to talk about some other examples that I read about in your book, in Japan, there's a system of some sort of complementary currency for healthcare for the elderly,
Japan,
right?
Japan is a very interesting case, Steve, because they really hit the wall about 20 years ago about how to deal with the elderly. And again, how would the government come up with the money, you know, to pay for elderly care? So they came up with a system called Furiai Kipu, which takes care of the elderly beyond what they would get in terms of medical care. So how elderly people could actually remain in their homes for longer. So how it works is that I go down the road to my neighbor and I might help her shop or I might drive her to the dentist or write a letter, whatever she needs. And for every hour that I spend helping her out, I get an electronic credit in my Furiai Kipu account. The beauty of this is I can use these electronic credits, say when I've got flu and I need somebody to pick up my kids, or I can save them for when I'm much older and actually need help in assisted living at my own home. Or, interestingly enough, I can transfer it to another part of Japan so somebody can come in and look after my mom. The beauty of this is the elderly that they surveyed love this because people are young, usually younger folks are coming into their home and these intergenerational relationships are forming and this hasn't cost the government anything.
Well, it makes me think that, I mean, just sort of on a much smaller scale, I mean, I know of people, for instance, who have a food sharing system. Mm-hmm. You know, I cook one day of the week and I make a bunch extra for other families and then, you know, I get all these other meals, or a babysitting co-op. I mean, those are, that's along the lines of what you're talking about,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Like, time banking is the most common system of complementary currencies or community currencies here in the United States. And the reason why, you know, people want to use time banking, it's a way of keeping track of the hours spent doing social purpose things.
Well, maybe we need to back up for a moment and talk about what money is. I mean, it would seem to be obvious, you know, it's a commodity that's exchanged for goods, but you're suggesting it's actually something else.
Yes. Now, in fact, money is an agreement. It lives in the same space as marriage, as a business deal. Okay? It's an agreement within a particular community to use something standardized as a medium of exchange. That's our definition. Now, from that perspective, it becomes possible to make all kinds of agreements.
Is there also a philosophy in these different kinds of currencies? I mean, you know, let's talk about the dollar, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's a very competitive system.
Exactly.
You know, and it's to some degree based on scarcity.
It is.
Are you sort of trying to bring in a different philosophy as to how we think about money?
It's not just a philosophy. It actually is different functionality. And there's sort of two very fundamental thoughts. In all national currency, and all national currencies are the same, whether it's a euro, you know, a peso, or indeed the dollar.
They're created the same way.
They're created the same way, absolutely out of bank debt. And they all have interest. Furthermore, because of interest, they have different functional dynamics, which include the erosion of social capital, the concentration of wealth, short-termism, and competition. Yeah.
So it sounds like what you're really trying to do is to show that there are other kinds of currencies that sidestep the banking system.
Exactly.
And to some degree, the banking system is tied into who has power in society.
We're talking about democratizing money for the first time. And it is becoming possible because of the information age.
Why because of the information age?
95% of all complementary currencies are electronic.
Is this something that's just sort of this whole system of complementary currencies? Are we talking about kind of dabbling around the edges of how we live? Or are you talking about something that could really be central to the way we conduct daily life?
It can change. It will change society. And with the challenges we have to face on this planet during the 21st century, we cannot address it with the tool set of the 17th century.
So you're saying that, I mean, the kind of financial disaster that we've seen over the last decade, well, really since 2007, I mean, you're saying that we'll see more of that.
Oh.
And the only way that we can deal with that is if we have these different currencies?
The IMF, according to their own statistics, show there's been 425 systemic crashes in the last 30 years.
40 years.
40 years, thank you.
Since 1970.
The last 40 years. I mean, that includes, you know, bank crises, which we experienced here in the United States in 2007, 2008. There's been monetary crashes where the actual money system itself, you know, tanked. We're talking about Argentina, for example, talking about the ruble. This is cyclical.
Well, okay, let's play this out a little bit. So, you know, we had this devastating financial crisis in 2007, 2008. Are you saying that these kinds of alternative currencies could somehow stem the impact of that kind of crisis?
They would not necessarily avoid the problem of the system itself, but it would be a buffer, a shock breaker. Yes, we can break the shocks. Similarly, for the social aspects, the aging of society has huge implications in terms of the quality of life of people. And if you try to address these issues with dollars, it won't work. It's just not possible. So you're going to have to either sacrifice that generation or invent new tools. And the Japanese already did. So in other words, the countries that are meeting these problems first are also the ones that are taking initiative in innovating.
Bernard Liotard and Jackie Dunn talking with Steve Paulson. Their book is called Rethinking Money,